It's day 10 of the Olympic Games. Let's find out what's in store and reflect on how the athletes got on over the weekend, both on and off the Olympic stage. Des Cahill is in Tokyo. Over to you, Des.
Thanks, Audrey. Well, the weekend is a long time ago now because, of course, we had overnight action for Monday. It's Monday afternoon here now after 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The big story here, though, is not involving competition. It's that Belarusian story that was mentioned in the news and the Belarusian sprinter who has voiced fears for her safety as she refused an order to fly home early for the Olympics because she criticised her coaches. Now, people would be aware that the Belarusians have been protesting in several guises against President Alexander Lukashenko, and including a sporting group. There was a sporting group set up in order to protest, Belarusian Sport Solidarity Foundation. Now, Kristina Simonouskaya says that she was asked to run in the 400 metres at short notice. She doesn't run 400. She wasn't here to do that, but they hadn't got a fourth to run in the relay, so she was asked to do it. She voiced criticism on Instagram, and then she had officials come to her room, tell her to pack her bags, and they brought her to the airport. She feared for her safety about going home, so she got the police involved at the airport and expressed her concerns about her safety. And she was seeking support from a European country. Initially, the Czech Republic and Poland said they were ready to offer visa and protection. The Austrians got involved in supporting her. The NIOC official went to stay with her. So she is now safe, we're told. But she's also afraid of repression on her family in Belarus. So it's a story that's continuing. And again, not unlike the Pat Hickey story in Rio, it's a non-competition story that's attracting a lot of attention here and will continue in doubt for a day or two more. It was a much quieter day, though, Audrey, for the Irish in Tokyo after hectic involvement over the past couple of days. We had just three athletes competing this morning and one is currently in action. So we can hear from the three who are competing this morning. Ciara McGeehan and Sarah Healy were the Irish competitors in the women's 1500 metres heats. Now, the top six in each heat would qualify for the semi-finals along with the next six fastest times. Ciara McGeehan was 10th in heat one, her time 4 minutes 7.29 seconds. And Sarah Healy was 11th in heat three. That was the fastest of the heats. Her time was 4 minutes 9.78 seconds. Neither time was good enough to qualify. And for Ciara McGeehan, obviously it was disappointment.
Ciara, 10th position, how are you feeling?
Not happy with that, to be perfectly honest with you. I put myself in the race, up the front. It went out hard, but not too hard. And just didn't have it in that last burn-up, which I'm pretty annoyed about and disappointed. But it's top six and six fastest losers. All I can do is hope that the other heats don't go as fast. And, I'm going to be the one sitting in the hot chair now waiting.
Yeah, look, you have a bit of a wait. There's two semi-finals to go. But you did everything right. You put yourself in a great position. Talk us through the last 300 metres.
Oh, the race just really hit up with about 600 to go. And, yeah, I was just in my head, like, keep your form, keep strong, tried my best. Just wasn't good enough there to be in that top six. I wanted an automatic cue, so I'm annoyed. I'm probably going to throw up knowing my luck in front of you.
Look, I won't keep you for long. I know you got away, but you know, you seem to be coming into form this time of the season, the 4:02 recently. So obviously your strategy coming into this heat, you know, you felt good, put yourself in a position.
Yeah, I did. I really put it all in there and I said I'm going to be up and be competitive. So you need to do just that last little bit. I'm going to wait and see. Hopefully it's enough. I didn't have an ideal week leading into it. I'm not one for sharing the troubles that rise and the toughness. But it wasn't ideal.
Was that due to the heat conditions or
no,
the illness?
Probably won't expose it because I'm still yet to race, all being well, semi-final. But yeah, picked up a little bit of a niggle.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if that just take my little edge off.
Yeah.
But I'll go back and I'll chat to my coach about it. There was no question I'd toe the line and fight for every inch of that. So, yes, I'm just going to hope that I'm out here in the semi-final and run better than that.
Well, fingers crossed. Hopefully you'll see you there.
Thanks a million, Dave.
And no, she hasn't made it. We've confirmation. She did not make it through, Ciara McGeehan, nor did one of the younger members of the Irish team, Sarah Healy.
It's definitely disappointing. Like, I definitely feel like I kind of just let the occasion get the better of me, and I don't normally get like too nervous, but I think I just got carried away, like getting nervous and stuff. So I'm disappointed because I was hoping the race would go like that, and I really felt like I could hang in with whatever pace, so I felt like I was fit enough for that. And I just kind of checked out after like 400 metres. I just wasn't able to compete. I just didn't have the energy. So it's disappointing, but I mean, yeah, I expected better, to be honest, of myself.
That's Sarah Healy. In the women's 200 metres heats, Phil Healy was in the same heat as the 100 metres Olympic champion, Elaine Thompson-Herah of Jamaica. Phil did run her best time of the season in finishing fifth, 23.21 seconds. But again, it was not quick enough to qualify.
No, it isn't fast enough. And look, I'm disappointed that it isn't quicker, but I gave it my all. I came out twice already for the 4x4, and I obviously had to sacrifice my individual a little bit for that, but with that we came away with an Olympic final. So coming away from this, like, yeah, of course I wanted to go quicker today, but it wasn't there. So,
but Phil, people have to understand the context of what you are doing here. You know, you're the first female athlete to try three events for Ireland Olympic Games. That's not an easy task, and to have the relay before your own individual, that's hard to manage. People have to understand that.
100%. Like, I look back at 2018 at European Championships, and I think 23, 24 was my best there, and that was me going in without any relay. So to come out and deliver just off my PB, I have to be happy. But initially, of course, I'm going to be disappointed. But yeah, to come out three events, being the first Irish person to be qualified in three events, like, that's making history. The relay made history, so like, there is so much to take from it. But when you give so much to an Olympic Games, an Olympic year, you just want to go out there and perform to your best.
That's Phil Healy. Well, now to a woman who fancies taking gold in three events. This is the big story in competition today, if you're going to be watching. It concerns an Ethiopian-born Dutch woman, Sifan Hassan, who's seeking a remarkable treble. Our athletes analyst David Matthews explains what she's trying to achieve.
Well, it's very unique. It's never been done before. She's trying to win Olympic gold at 1500, 5000 and 10,000 metres. It's never been done. A 5000 and 10,000 double has been done twice before by Mo Farah and Lassie Verrin. But Sifan Hassan is trying to replicate this and go one further by adding the 1500 metres. But she fell today in her heat, and with about, it was 400 metres to go, she hit the deck and she was basically 30 metres behind, and managed somehow to make, not only make up that 30 metres, but pass and win it. So she's a very busy schedule ahead of her. She goes in the 5,000 metre final tonight, and she has then the 1,500 metre semi-final, and if she progresses on that, the 1,500 final on Friday, and to cap off a busy week for her, a 10,000 metre final on Saturday. It's a huge ask, a phenomenal athlete, and I'm not sure it can be done.
All right, but I mean, the six races in 8 days, the heat is going to be a factor as well, isn't it?
The heat is completely debilitating. We're seeing athletes, you know, struggling and extremely distressed coming off the track, and more so in the distance races. The sprinters and jumpers, we're seeing incredible performances by them, but it really is attritional when you move up in distances, and no more so than the 5 and 10,000 metres. So it's maybe one step too far for her, but time will tell.
And that's the name. Now, just watch out for Sifan Hassan later on if you're watching the athletics. The one Irish person currently in competition is Oliver Dingley in diving, and he has completed round three just moments ago. He's 26th of 29. Only the top 18 will qualify from there. And later today, three Irish riders competing in the final discipline of the eventing competition. That's show jumping. Sarah Ennis, Sam Watson and Austin O'Connor. And the other big story here, Audrey, at the moment is to watch out for this evening. Laurel Hubbard will make history. She's the first transgender sportsperson to be picked to compete at an Olympics, and she's in the weightlifting final, a 43-year-old New Zealander who transitioned from male to female back in 2012, and her selection has sparked a lot of debate about fair competition at the Games. We'll have more on that again later. But that's it so far from Tokyo, Audrey.
Well, we're going to talk now a little bit more about that Belarusian athlete who is in police protection in Tokyo after she said that her country's Olympic officials tried to force her to leave Japan Japan. We can talk to Belarusian journalist Hanna Lubakova, who has been following this story. Hanna, thanks a million for joining us on Morning Ireland, and good morning to you. The athlete Kristina Szymanowskaja, her distance is 200 metres. So what did she say she was being asked to do by her country's Olympic officials?
So it all started a few days ago when she published information on her Instagram. She mentioned that she was kind of forced to enter into the women's 400 meters relay at the games by Belarus Athletic Federation without prior notice. And she was very vocal about that. She said that it's not fair, and other athletes who were supposed to do this distance were not able to come because of some negligence by the Belarusian sports authorities. So that's what she said. She publicly criticized the authorities, and that's how it all started.
So what happened then? Once that criticism was public, what happened to her?
On Sunday, yesterday, she was forced to pack her luggage, and she was taken to the airport in Tokyo. And basically, she was told that she needs to come back to Minsk, to Belarus, and she cannot participate in the games anymore. And she was told this by her team, by the national Belarusian delegation at the Olympics. She got scared, because she immediately understood that she might have been arrested in Minsk and Belarus, because a lot of propaganda materials, television started criticizing her. And she was also told by her team that was not the decision of the Ministry of Sports, but the decision was made on a higher level, meaning that perhaps Lukashenko or his closest circle might have decided to bring her back to Belarus.
And so she was taken to the airport. Do we know then how she was allowed, or how she approached the police at the airport?
What we know is that she was discussing this with her husband and with the other athletes who were repressed and who were forced to flee the country, and she was recommended to approach the police. So that's what she did while at the airport, and her concerns were taken seriously. She was taken to a police department at the airport, and she spent the night at a hotel at the airport, and she announced that she's going to apply for asylum because she fears for her safety, for her freedom. And we know that several countries already offered her assistance, such as the Czech Republic, Poland, Slovenia. And what kind of the recent information that I have is that she is going to apply for asylum in Poland. So she might be traveling there very soon.
Okay. And what has the response been? Has there been any response from the Belarusian authorities to these latest developments?
So obviously the National Olympics Committee denied the whole situation. They said that she was just being kind of asked to come back to Belarus because she was not able to participate in the games because of her mental, emotional state. However, a conversation was leaked. We don't know who recorded this. It might have been even Kristina Szymanowskaja. So the conversation between her and her team, the delegation, was leaked in which they criticized her. She cried. They were saying that they basically did not mention any the need for her to seek some medical assistance. So perhaps they only came up with this fake accusations that she was not able to participate in the games. Now, again, a lot of propaganda. She's been criticized on television and so on. So this is really dangerous for her to come back.
And what about her family? Because presumably she has family in Belarus. Are they safe?
Well, people in Belarus are not safe at all. Everybody can be arrested. And as you know, since August, there have been more than 35,000 people who have been arrested. So we cannot really say whether her family is safe. She might consider trying to move them to Poland or wherever she's going to travel. At this point, her safety obviously is under she wouldn't be safe in Belarus. We cannot say the same about, what might happen to her parents. It's really unclear at this stage.
And in terms of the athletes who have been representing Belarus at the Olympics, are there political divisions among them between those who support the regime in Minsk and those who oppose Lukashenko?
Perhaps I should start with mentioning that in August there have been more than 1,000 athletes who signed this open letter to Alexander Lukashenko, asking him and the regime in Minsk generally to stop repressions, to end violence, to release political prisoners. And many of these athletes were repressed, were fired from the national team, forced to flee the country. And those who went to Japan, to Tokyo, well, some of them are those who remain loyal. So we might not expect some kind of political criticism or, you know, expect them being vocal. However, well, there were already some kind of critical voices of Tymanovskaya, but there was also a lot of support for her from other athletes who fled the country, who immediately offered assistance, offered help, and they continue kind of helping her.
Okay, well, thank you very much indeed for bringing us up to date with this story this morning. Journalist Hanna Lubakova on the latest on that Belarusian athlete who is in police protection in Tokyo this morning. Now, the Catholic Bishop of Rafoe, Alan McGuckian, has become the fifth bishop to allow their local parishes to proceed with First Holy Communions and confirmations later this month. That would go against current public health advice. And he follows the bishops of Elphin, Meath, Clogher and Waterford Lismore. It will fall to the priests of the parish to carry out the communions and help prepare the children for both sacraments. So will many do it willingly or will they be nervous about it? Well, we are joined this morning by Father Tim Hazelwood, who is parish priest of Killa in East Cork. He's a member of the Association of Catholic Priests, which describes itself as a forum for those to reflect on issues affecting the church. Father Hazelwood, good morning.
Good morning.
You're very welcome to the programme. Now, your own bishop hasn't made his views known on this, but if he asked you to proceed with communion and confirmation, would you?
I would be very slow. I would be very slow. I suppose I'd ask what the decision is based on. The reality is that NEFED are the medical scientific experts, and they have weighed up and they've guided us very well up until now. And they obviously see danger in gatherings where there's mixed age groups and where there will be a lot of people who are not vaccinated. And we are told this Delta variant is very dangerous. So what we have is a gathering. And I don't think it's the gathering, the church, the issue is, because we're used to that controlled space and limiting the numbers. But it's the private gatherings. Communion confirmation is a huge event for any family, and all the family want to be part of that, and lots of people are invited. So the social element is huge, and I think that's where the difficulty is.
And that is understandable because of the just the impact of people congregating still, even though so many people are vaccinated. But can the bishops be held responsible for what people do afterwards?
But I suppose, why did we have guidelines up until now? Is to protect people. And I think this is where I think the most damage is going to be done by this policy. And that is the moral authority that we have. We're supposed to be pro-life. And here, we're putting pressure on people together. You know, if it's going to happen, people who have, I've known of people who came to sacraments who are having cancer treatment and who weren't vaccinated. You know, who came because they feel it's such an important event in their families. Some women who are pregnant who came and are not vaccinated. So there are a cohort out there still who are not vaccinated. So,
but personal responsibility means that they don't have to go to the party afterwards if there is one.
But that's very difficult when you're in a family. You know, if it's your child or your grandchild or, you know, it's... But it's more than that. I think it's the example that we're giving as well. We're the ones now who are saying you don't have to listen to the advice. And I think we should be the ones leading, showing example to protect people.
It's very difficult though, isn't it? Because you as a priest and the others would obviously regard these sacraments as extremely important for people of faith, and they have already been delayed for several months now.
Yes, but like that's the important word you have there is delayed. Like what the government is saying, you can't have them. They're not saying that. And I think because of the Taoiseach said, just hold off for another bit until there's more vaccinated. That's what they're saying. They're not saying you can't have them. And the reality is we're having baptisms have begun again. We have masses each weekend. And like if we're totally honest, the amount of people who from the cohort of First Communions and Confirmation who come every week is very low. It's the social aspect of it is the pressure. And priests are going to be under fierce pressure now because parents are meant to have it. They want a day for their children.
Well, I was going to ask you about colleagues. Are you getting much indication from colleagues that they're nervous about this?
Well, some are nervous, but also some are under pressure because if everybody else in the next parish are doing it, like you'll be set up as to being the baddie if you don't do it. You know, so like the pressure is being put back onto the priests in the parish, and I think it's very easy for a bishop to say, go ahead, you can do it. And I can understand too, like there are some parishes that last year's confirmation isn't done even. Mm-hmm. So you have 2 years.
Okay. Well, look, we will leave it there. No doubt more on this to come in the days and weeks ahead. Thank you very much, Father Tim Hazelwood, Parish Priest of Killa in East Cork and a member of the Association of Catholic Priests. It's 8:32 almost now on Morning Ireland, and Tommy's back with a news update.
Thanks, Audrey. Pharmacists have said they're willing to administer coronavirus booster vaccines when necessary. The Secretary General of the Irish Pharmacy Union, Dara O'Loughlin, said pharmacies would deliver the shot based on whatever advice the National Immunisation Advisory Committee, or NIAC, might give to the government. Yesterday, the Chief Executive of the Health Service Executive, Paul Reid, said that the expectation was that vaccines to prolong protection against COVID-19 would be administered along with the annual flu vaccines. The International Olympic Committee has said the Belarusian athlete Kristina Tsimovskaya is safe and well. Yesterday, the 24-year-old sprinter saw protection from Japanese police, telling them she had been brought to Haneda Airport in Tokyo against her will by officials of her national Olympic team. She refused to get on a flight to Belarus, fearing for her safety. Her claim followed criticism she had made of those coaching her. France said this morning it would be an honour if Europe were to grant political asylum to the athletes. In a statement, the IOC said she has spent the night at an airport hotel and that IOC officials will be speaking to her today with a view to supporting her decision. Poland and the Czech Republic have offered her a visa that would enable her to seek asylum in either of the two countries. It's understood she intends on seeking asylum with the Polish embassy in Tokyo today. And the weather forecast, it'll be cloudy with rain spreading over the western half of the country this morning, but not as wet further east. Rain will extend to most areas during the morning. Eastern parts of Ulster and Leinster will be generally dry. There'll be sunny spells and showers this afternoon. Highest temperatures will range from 15 to 18 degrees. Audrey.
And what a great weekend of sport it was, and more to come. Darren Frehill's here. Morning, Darren.
Good morning, Audrey. Yes, a busy, busy morning once again. The Olympic headlines, Des was on earlier in the programme to give us some reaction to everything that was going on. But the latest we have is that the Irish diver, Oliver Dingley, currently 26th of 29 competitors, 3 rounds to go in the 3-metre springboard event. He needs to be inside the top 18 to qualify for the semi-final, so he has a bit of work to do. Ciarán Maguíon and Sarah Healy have not progressed beyond their heats in the 1500 metres, and Phil Healy has missed out on the semi-finals in the 200. Last night, we got a reminder that COVID continues to be a threat, with news that the Cork under-20 hurlers will not be able to fulfil their All-Ireland under-20 final next weekend after a positive COVID-19 test was recorded in the camp. Now, all members of their playing and staff and management are deemed to be close contacts. They're due to play Galway next Saturday. They're hoping to have the fixture played at a later date. Patrick Mulcahy has been speaking with the Cork chair, Mark Sheehan.
We will not be in a position to play the match as scheduled on next Saturday. But we expect that all going well, you know, and in terms of, I suppose, the protocols and being followed, that match will be rescheduled, and we'd be in a position to take part in that. So we hope that everything will be well for the people involved, and we'll obviously be following the HSE guidelines and association guidance on this particular situation.
And obviously, because of the circumstances, in a normal time, you would have points would be awarded, game would be forfeited. But obviously, because there's only one game left in this championship, you know, I think a lot of people will find themselves in a different situation.
Yes, certainly, I suppose. And again, you know, I suppose it's ironic we're here tonight in Páirc Uíomh, finishing off 2020 game, cracking game between Knocknagree and Cantorque, just concluded a few minutes ago. So look, the virus is still there, and you know, you follow the guidelines, and obviously in a circumstance when there's just one game left, you know, I suppose that makes the situation from a scheduling point of view slightly easier, but obviously the you know, the health and well-being of everyone is the key, and you know, so that's, we have to keep that to the forefront, and so no cause for alarm on that front either, mind you, but we'll follow the guidance.
Yeah, that is a shame, but good to hear the positive news that nothing serious as of yet within that camp. One of the stories of the weekend, the performance of the Meath ladies football team. They booked a place in the TG Cahir All-Ireland football semi-finals. They beat Armagh. Cork got the better of Waterford, so it's Meath and Cork in that semi-final against each other. And what a story Meath have been. They pushed so hard to get back to the senior ranks, have come so close over the last 3 years, and last season finally got promoted, won the intermediate title, and now they're one game away from a final in their first campaign back. Eamon Murray is their manager, and Eamon is a breath of fresh air, to be honest with you, and has been telling Adrian Eames what this all means.
It's beyond my wildest dream to ever get this far. I knew they would, but I didn't think I'd be with them at stage. I thought it might take 2 or 3 years to get that far. But to get here, the last year for us has been just out of this world. You know, intermediate champions before Christmas, league champions, Division 1 football, out of semi-final. And anything's possible for this bunch of girls here. They just train all 3 to 4 nights a week and enjoy it. There's never a bad word of them. Just love together, friendship to have. Brilliant for the county board, all the 7,000 members we have. LMF from there, TG Cahir, look at it. What can I say more? Proud is no word for it. This is a massive day, you know.
I guess the question now is, people will be saying, how far can you possibly go?
We have no fear. We'll take the next game. We'll go in relaxed, and there'll be no nerves whatsoever. Like today, we're skitting and laughing before the game today as if it was a challenge match. That's what we're going to... Training is the same, relaxed attitude, messing at training, but put in the hard work. That's the way we'll treat Cork. No fear.
No fear. Well done, Eamon, and all the crew there. Me, two more quarterfinals today. Mayo and Galway, 1:45. Then 5 in a row chasing Dublin up against Donegal at 4. Now, the Dublin men beat Kildare to claim the Leinster title yesterday. They've booked a place in the All-Ireland semi-finals. 20 points to 1-9 winners. They'll meet Mayo in the last four of the championship. Desi Farther manager's been chatting Mike McCartney.
Kildare had obviously set up with a very definite plan. They were difficult to break down, to penetrate, and... I think in the first half, maybe some of our decision-making around shots on goal wasn't great, and we looked at that and did a better job on that in the second half.
The big opposition now is Mayo.
Yeah, we haven't. Obviously, we've been focused on Kildare, so the attention turns to Mayo very quickly for us. They were hugely impressive in their second half against Galway here in the Connacht final, and there's very little separates the teams always, so we're expecting a huge tussle.
Is this the best Dublin have been all year?
Today, yeah, it was the most consistent we've been, you know, but there's still plenty to work on, and we will need to improve as we go on.
Yeah, they are going to be up against it against Mayo. That is going to be some match. Maybe their toughest test of the year so far. Let's wait and see the weekend after next. Can't wait for that one. Offaly beat Derry to win the Christy Ring Cup final. Great weekend for Offaly supporters. The draw for the Littlewoods Camogie quarterfinals. We'll see Tip meet Waterford. Wexford will play Kilkenny. Cork and Galway go straight to the semi-finals. Very exciting news from Talla. Irish underage international Kevin Seffey will join Inter Milan from Rovers this week. He's just 16 years of age and he'll become part of the Inter Milan under-19 squad for now. He announced his arrival with a goal for Shamrock Rovers against Longford Town last October. Youngest ever scorer in the League of Ireland at the age of 15. Finally, current option defended his crown in the Annanora Handicap on the final day of the Galway Festival. The horse trained by Aidan McGuinness and ridden by Keane McRedman. That is all your sport for now.
Let's talk now to the CEO of the HSE, Paul Reid. Paul, save us a job from going to the website. Will these centres be open all week?
Morning, Audrey. Yeah, well, certainly from today, another further 26 centres are open all across the country. So I encourage everybody to look at our site, hse.ie, and just clarify the times today for those opening. We did plan to run them throughout the weekend. And as your reporter, Amy and Sinead from HSE, has captured very there, a huge success. both in terms of atmosphere, but also in terms of uptake, because it has been part of our strategy of the last few weeks to really surge the uptake to the best extent we can. If you look just purely in the last 6 weeks, we've now administered 2.1 million vaccines administered in a six-week period. And if you contrast that with the start of the vaccination programme back in quarter one, just 1 million in 12 weeks in the first quarter. So I think it's captured really well, a really great success so far. But it is, they are open today. Some centres are open all day, like the Aviva and Croke Park all day.
And so tomorrow and the rest of the week, will they all still be open or just some?
No, our vaccination centres continue as normal through appointments for the rest of the week. So this was just an initiative for walk-ins that we had from Friday until Monday, Bank Holiday Monday. What we are going to consider now is the use of walk-in centres at targeted times, looking forward. But they were just a targeted initiative, which has worked exactly as we would have liked it. In fact, much better, particularly with the uptake on younger people.
Absolutely. And the next younger group, I suppose, is the 12 to 15-year-olds. When will they be able to register?
Yeah, there's about 280,000 in total in these CSO census for that age group. What we're finalising this week in the next couple of days actually are three issues. First of all, the consent issues and how we manage the consent issues. So it's a key issue for us. Second issue is the communications, how we communicate at a national level and indeed at an individual level, as young people come forward with their parents, a guardian. And thirdly, we have to make significant changes to the IT system to capture the guardian parents' details as well as the individuals. We do expect mid this week to make an announcement as to the actual date startup. But if it's not by the end of the next week, it'll certainly be early the following week.
OK. And will those who are immunosuppressed or who are perhaps living with someone with an underlying condition, will they get priority?
Yeah, well, obviously the model in which we're going to implement the approach on this one will be, we expect a combination. We're talking with the pharmacies representative bodies, GPs representative bodies and vaccination centres. And certainly we do see that GPs and pharmacies can play a key role, particularly to prioritise some of those most vulnerable people and that children and that age group with certain complex needs. So we would like to see them being prioritised through the process. But equally, we think we can work through this, you know, and quite quickly based on everything we've been doing so far.
And secondary school restarts the last week of August. Will that cohort, will they all have their first jab by then?
Yeah, our intention is to work through this really quickly and efficiently through August, all depending on the date that we start. But we will be aiming to maximise the vast majority of that uptake within that population through August. And then obviously second vaccination will take place through September. So it's just another exciting part of the vaccination programme, Audrey, overall. I think your Vox Pops, etc. have captured really well. And just to mention, I mean, I think young people have played such a key role in a very changing Ireland over the last number of years. And I actually think this weekend reflects another one of those moments.
And will this cohort, 280,000, will they be done in the vaccination centres or are you planning the staggered closure of those centres now?
So for the 280,000 of the 12 to 15s, we expect it to be a combination of GPs, pharmacies, which have significant reach all across the country. Some vaccination centres utilised also. We are looking forward just in terms of the vaccination programme overall, particularly as we have to start commencing with boosters. And we are looking at the role of vaccination centres as part of that and also GPs and pharmacies. So we do see a role for vaccination centres, but probably not at the scale that we've been operating 43 centres across the country. We'll continue that till we have everybody vaccinated.
OK, let's talk about the hospital figures now, because unfortunately there are still people getting sick with COVID and needing hospital treatment. How many are in hospital because they're sick from COVID this morning?
Yeah, as of last night, we've 171 people in hospital with COVID and we've 26 in ICU. So, you know, we are still concerned about the, you know, slowly, continuously rising numbers of hospitalised cases. I mean, 4 weeks ago, that was just at 39 people in hospital. It is at 171. So we're monitoring quite closely. You know, thankfully, we're beginning to see the daily case numbers kind of hold or plateau. But we have seen that steady rise in hospitalisations, which is a continued cause of concern for us.
And what can you tell us, Paul, about those people who are in hospital with COVID, the age range of them?
We haven't seen a significant change in the age range with the Delta variant of hospitalizations. I suppose if we take a very quick snapshot of ICU, which we did over the weekend, if we have 26 people in ICU this morning, about literally 22 of those would be in the age bracket 50 plus, and four would be in the age bracket of 19 to 30. So we are seeing young people equally being hospitalised. I think that's an important message for everybody. The age profile hasn't particularly shifted. I would say a couple of things on it that, you know, we've always been trying to urge caution on this one, because sometimes social media or misinformation can say, well, if you're in hospital, you're not really sick with COVID. Well, you know, you are. We have a lot of people needing high acute care, respiratory support, and sometimes obviously ICU. So strong message from me this morning is to everybody to please continue to do what we are doing and treating this Delta virus serious. And we'll continue the pace that we're at to protect everybody against it. But it is still a very live threat.
Yeah, and those 26 who are in ICU, they are in ICU because they have COVID.
I think the reality of it is, if you look at our hospitalizations overall, it's always a combination of people who have COVID and a combination of people who may have other illnesses that they've been admitted with and then identified as COVID. But those 26 people are being treated for COVID in ICU, which is quite significant. And I always remind people, we brought one of our clinical nurse managers, sometimes one of our press briefings nurse manager from St. James's, Bernie Warthouse, just to describe what people were experiencing and what our nurses, frontline workers, were experiencing as people are admitted to hospital and ICU. And, you know, it is a really, really significant illness that we have to protect people against always.
No doubt about that. And the 22 who are over 50, have they all been vaccinated fully?
Yeah. It's interesting. We're doing some further analysis of all the hospitalizations and all of those in ICU, etc. What we are probably seeing is about 22%. And this is a snapshot, Audrey, so it's important not to take complete trends from this. But about 22% of those have been vaccinated. So 78% of those in ICU over the weekend haven't been vaccinated. Now, again, these are off small numbers. This can't be, you know, set out as a kind of trend right now, but it is something that we're going to monitor closely.
Okay, we will leave it there for now. Thank you very much for joining us on Morning Ireland this morning, the CEO of the HSE, Paul Reid. 18,000, that's the number in total who went into the walk-in vaccination centres across the country over the weekend to get their first dose of vaccine. Just under 87% of the adult population are now partially vaccinated. Almost 73% are fully done. For the latest, we can join our reporter Amy Nirieda, who is at one of these walk-in vaccination centres in Cork this morning. Amy.
Good morning, Audrey. Turnout has been extraordinary here in Cork. I'm here in the Melbourne building at Munster Technological University in Bishopstown, where another walk-in centre will be opening in about an hour and a half. But over the weekend, turnout has been very strong here under the South South West Hospital Group and community healthcare organisations, with 2,875 people turning up to avail of walk-in facilities across those counties. 1,193 of those attended the facilities in Cork. As you said, 18,000 people attended walk-in clinics across the country over the weekend. Our listeners might have seen pictures of queues forming outside places like Cork City Hall and Dublin City West, and huge crowds are expected to gather again today. I came to Cork yesterday and spoke to some people who had just gotten their jabs, and I must say there was a real pep in the step of people walking down the steps of City Hall afterwards.
I kept on missing the online registering time, so this was walk-in, so it was easy.
And do you instantly now come out of there feeling a bit more protected?
I guess so, yeah. Practically, that is the reality of it.
I'm 16. It was fine, yeah.
Any pain in the arm or anything yet?
Not yet.
You're raring to go, are you?
Yeah, say me and my friend were sick of sitting in parks and stuff, so we can go inside to restaurants.
Was it more so for that social side of things, or do you actually feel more protected?
I feel a bit more protected, but also just so we can do more, younger people can do more stuff than just going around, walking around in parks and streets and stuff.
Do you feel happy now that she has it and she's
Yeah, she's the last one of the family now to be done, so we're delighted. No, she was afraid that we'd make her sit outside in the rain while we were eating inside.
Throw some chicken goujons out the window at you.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Well, at the end of the summer, it's going to be really nice for everybody to be able to sit indoors out of the rain.
Yeah, I feel fine, but my arm is sore.
Do you feel a bit more protected now that you have it?
Yeah, I have to wear a mask now. Wait,
would you have to wear a mask?
Oh, do I still have to wear a mask?
Yeah.
I thought that was the point.
No.
Oh, I can go on holidays. I'm delighted.
You can get on with your life a bit more now.
Yeah.
So you're happy out.
Oh, yeah.
All okay?
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was very straightforward and very quick.
We registered for a clinic, our local clinic, but we haven't gotten
anything
at all.
So yeah. It was just easier for you to come in here?
Yeah, it was easy enough just to walk in.
It was very easy.
As soon as we heard about it, we were like, perfect.
Yeah, we just want to go back to normalcy a bit.
To be honest, we're pretty quiet people. We don't go all too much, but even it's getting to us now. Like,
I got the visor, 2 jabs in 3 weeks' time, go back in again.
Can I ask you why you haven't, or have you registered already?
No, I didn't register. I just didn't get around to doing it, really. I knew the walk-in vaccine was coming, so...
I feel good, just the sore arm, that's all, really. I was already registered. I had to get over and done it, you know, because I feel like we're getting nowhere by not getting vaccinated.
It was fine. It didn't hurt. It was very quick, so that's good.
Any reason why you decided to get the walk-in as opposed to, say, registering and waiting? Or were you just eager to get it?
Yeah, we just wanted to get it as early as possible, really.
Some people speaking outside Cork City Hall yesterday. Now, I'm joined by Project Lead Vaccinations with South South West Hospital Group and Assistant Director of Nursing, Sinead Horgan, who has been running operations here across the South South West. Sinead, we know now how successful these walk-in centres have been with the numbers we've seen, but what is the process like for those who arrive on the day?
Thanks, Amy. The process is quite simply that you walk in, you do not require an appointment, and it takes an average about 30 minutes. We have extra staff on across all sites to assist you with the administration process. What we require is your PPS and your air code, your mobile phone number, which is essential that you will receive your text message in 3 weeks' time for your second dose, your email address and your address to allow us to send your vaccination cert after you've had your second vaccine. Of course, we'll need a form of photo ID as well. You'll be met by a good team here, administration staff. You can hear them coming in already, defence forces, vaccinators, our volunteers, the security staff, students, pharmacists. And of course, if you're here from a different region and your holidays, we welcome you here today, and you can have your second vaccine in your own locality when you return home in 3 weeks' time.
So the walk-in centres are just for your first dose, isn't it?
That's correct, just for your first dose, and it's for the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine this weekend.
Now, we heard a lot of younger voices in my Vox Pop earlier. Is it fair to say that the clinics were most popular amongst those younger age cohorts who wouldn't have been called for any appointments at this stage?
What we've seen across the region in the last few days was up to 50% were actually the younger age cohort. It's important to remember that a lot of the younger 16, 17-year-olds have already been issued an appointment. What we did see was a wide range of ages turning up across all age categories, up to and including the over 70s. And that we were delighted with, to be honest, because what this walk-in clinics have proved is that we've made it more accessible for people. We've given them an opportunity to arrive for their vaccine at a time that suits them, and also that we have a wide range of support for them this weekend to help them to register when they mightn't have had an opportunity to do so before this.
Over the coming days, then, how can people avail of the walk-in facilities in the South South West?
Everything is available on the HSE website. You can look up for your region. But here today, here in MTU, we're opened from 10 until 4 walk-in today. Waterford Institute of Technology is opened in the arena from 11:30 to 16:30 today at 4:30. And, of course, in Kerry, in Tralee tomorrow, the Kerry Sports Academy will be open from 11 to 3. And we welcome anyone to come along.
Sinead Horgan, Assistant Director of Nursing with the HSC, thank you for joining us on the programme, as well as the vaccine centre here at MTU, which will open at 10. As Sinead said, there are over 24 centres open across the country for walk-ins. So for more information on your nearest centre, all details are available on the HSC website. But for now, it's back to you, Audrey.